Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series today, the one you've been waiting for, Nick Moore and Lamar Jackson. That's probably the one you've been waiting for. I'm just guessing. But joining me here to do that is Pete Gilbert. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Pete, well-known for all his work on WBAL, in particular, one of the few shows on TV these days that does not have a strict time limit. Time is money on TV, right?
Except for it apparently at about 1 a.m. on Monday mornings during football season when we can, they said, just go for it. Just go ahead. It's all you. So Keith Mills and myself on Ravens wrap up Sunday nights into Monday morning, we go till we're done, which is great.
All right. Always great seeing Pete out of camp, but get a chance to talk football a little bit. We'll be out there tomorrow. We're recording this on the 27th of May. It'll be airing substantially after this, but the first OTA is tomorrow. There's some question as to whether Lamar Jackson might be there or not. And Pete, having seen pictures of DeAndre Hopkins, surmises that
Lamar is not there or was not there for day one. That does not necessarily mean he won't be there for day two, although I suspect he would not. Generally, when you're there for one, you're there for three. And there was a time when that kind of bugged me, and you know, it felt like that it was detrimental. Come to learn, Lamar goes to the beat of his own drum, and when it matters, he's ready. By and large, that's who he is. And so I don't think, you know, I'm not worried about chemistry in May not being developed with DeAndre Hopkins. They get to camp, they'll get their work in, and you know, I mean, we had these same concerns a year ago, and he put up one of the greatest seasons in the history of the NFL in the quarterback position. So I'm not going to let it bother me. If it doesn't bother Lamar, if it doesn't bother John Harbaugh, it doesn't bother Eric DaCosta.
Didn't bother Ed Reed and Ray Lewis either. So, you know, when we talk through this, there are a lot of guys who have felt like they didn't want to do this. And you go back far enough in all sports, Ted Williams says in his book openly how much he hated spring training and was always trying to avoid it with a holdout. And so he's not alone among great athletes ever.
I mean, obviously the quarterback position is different, particularly in the NFL, the complexity that comes with it and the leadership role that you assume. And so, I mean, all things being equal, yeah, I'd love to see Lamar there for every offseason Ravens practice. But if it's going to make him feel better about when he's there later on, and you want Lamar feeling at his best. And if that's what it is, again, he is one of one. So, you know, who am I to say no? You're hurting yourself or your team by not being there for a May, you know, no padded practice. I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to go quickly, I hope, through the Nick Moore undercard to this. And the way these pairings are established, there's generally speaking one offense or one defensive player, and sometimes it has to be a special teams player. And Lamar Jackson has gotten paired now 2 years in a row with Nick Moore for fairly obvious reasons in terms of prominence on the top 60 or so players that are included in the series. But Nick's entering his fourth year. He spent all of 2023, you may remember, which is a sandwich year in his Ravens career, on NFI. And that's when they got Ott, I believe, came in, a guy who had some log snapping experience. Nick Moore, in his fourth season, will turn 33 in December.
He will, and that is because he was a baseball player before he was a football player. And he was in the minor leagues for several years with the Red Sox organization and finally saw that wasn't going to happen. I think it was something about his 400 OPS that led him to believe that maybe needs to find something else. So he goes to Georgia as a football player, initially as like a linebacker. And you see him, he's got a nice build to him. And then switched to long snapper and thought, I think I can make a career out of this. And lo and behold, he was correct.
Yeah, 618 career OPS in the minor leagues for the Red Sox. Let's not slander the guy, but played between 18 and 21 there. So there's still a significant gap of no work on his resume between about 2015 and 2020 that's unaccounted for. I think he's going to have some explaining to do, but not tonight. AP2 in 2022, his first season with the Ravens. Tucker was 8.8. Let me be clear on that. Plus 8.8 on field goals and expectation and extra points above expectation. So that's a stat kept by FTN. It's the most significant stat for kickers because it evaluates how many points they should be expected to get, and it takes the kind of the field goal length out of the equation. So if you're attempting a 65-yard field goal, you probably have something like 0.5 points expected out of three. And if you don't make it, it's not the end of the world. But the guys who kick, who attempt longer kicks, are not then punished for their, such attempts. Anyway, he's AP2 that year. Tucker slipped in each of his 3 years, or each of the last 3 years, I should say, 8.8, 3.1, and then minus 5.3, 27th last year in the NFL. The changes made, obviously, we're not going to go into the whole Justin Tucker situation, so we'll leave that alone. But there are plenty of good reasons for play purposes why Tucker is no longer here.
Oh, no doubt about it. And, he had that real lousy stretch for last season. I mean, remember, though, after the bye, he didn't miss a kick. And so they really did rectify things as far as getting that, the trio. And as Tucker often liked to point out, I'm not sure how much he always believed it, but he always wanted to say it, that it was, we make kicks, I miss them, is mm-hmm. the way he would describe it. And, it really does take a teamwork to make a kick. And he always took the blame when it was a miss. But reality is, it's still one third of the equation for each guy, the snap, the hold, the kick. And so they did get better at the end, this trio with Jordan Stout holding. And, Nick Moore is really solid. He knows what he's doing. He handles the pressure. I don't think he's going to be great, he has to chase anybody down, make a tackle. But I don't have any doubts when it comes to his ability to put the ball where it needs to go, on the extra points and on the field goal attempts. I have greater question about Jordan Stout holding it than I do Nick Moore snapping it.
I think from the people I've talked to in the organization, they are very clear that Jordan Stout is not the problem. And I had the same question. I've brought Jordan Stout's name up many times as, really as a question and saying how much of this is Stout, how much of this is Stout. But they, the claim from John Harbaugh and from others in the organization is it's not him at all, that he's one of the best holders in the entire league. So, I expect, has to figure into my expectations for Tyler Loop for this season, is that the other two thirds of the team seem to have it together. One other thing about Nick Moore before we move on to what a good and a great season is, though, had a really unproductive year as a punt coverage player. This is the first year this has happened, by the way, because he's had some tackles on with the punt team, and missed tackle totals are different for special teams players. If you miss one out of every eight tackles, that might be about normal. For most defensive positions, it's more like two out of every five for special teams players, because you're running downfield. There's a lot of open field tackles that get missed. He made like 7 of 8, I want to say career. It might have been 8 out of 9 prior to this year, and he didn't have any tackles, and he had one miss this last year. It's only among 22 return punts. It's not a big sample or anything, but a little bit disturbing that an older player like that all of a sudden is kind of not making tackles.
Well, as you said, he's older, and yeah. 33, when you're not the elite athlete of generally the other players out there going to make tackles, that can show up faster. You're going to go off the cliff a little quicker at that age. So that's certainly something that they'll have to factor in, no doubt about it. But what I think is critical is that he's the veteran. He's the older guy in this group that is now very young and not nearly as experienced. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all looked up to Justin before to lead that group. And that, again, when you're special teams like that, the punter, the holder, the kicker, and the snapper, that the trio that is three guys, the way they do it is with three, you spend so much time together. It's insane. And you do so much time where you're not doing anything.
That's right.
You literally just have to kill time together. And so chemistry is really of the utmost importance. You've got to be able to get along, and you've got to be able to read your other guys to know what they need. And that's, I think, going to be really incumbent on Nick Moore to be the guy to understand and read who needs what, mentally as much as anything physically. When you've got, assuming Tyler Loop wins the job, a rookie kicker, that is obviously very young, and Stout's what, 25 or so? So it's 24. So it's, yeah, he's got to be the guy that's ahead of this version of the Wolfpack.
Yeah. Incredibly, Stout's about to be a free agent, which is incredible to me that it's happened this quickly, but it's because of the longevity of Ravens punters and kickers that we've had with Cook and Tucker being here so long. But let's talk about what a good season and a great season is for Nick Moore. I've only got one denomination for this, but I've tried to place these at the 60th and 80th percentile. You do whatever you feel is appropriate. What's a good season
for Nick Moore is he's healthy. He's able to be there for, at all times when the team counts on you, is able to make a play or maybe two in terms of making a tackle, doing something good, not screw anything up. Don't whiff when you're the last guy. Just be accountable in that regard, and put the ball where it needs to go for the kicks. Put them right square that you don't have Jordan Stout leaning and lunging and put it where it is. And then, the rest should take care of itself.
All right. I'll state really simply, I would say a good season is almost entirely dependent on his field goal and extra points above expectation. If the Ravens are in the top 12 with a rookie kicker, then I think he and Stout get kudos for putting the Ravens in that position, even if Loop is the one making those kicks. That's a good season for you. What's a great season?
A great season is he does make some plays, in special teams, maybe forces a fumble, right? Ooh. Does something that can be a game-changing kind of play. Again, you're going to have very few swings, very few opportunities in that regard. But if something like that happens once or maybe even twice, that would make for a great on that end. And then, if Loop comes out and he hits 90% of his kicks, and he's, leading the, and then you got to feel that that is a great season and that he just shows the leadership that is going to be required of him in this group and shows it in a very clear way to make sure that that group stays together. And especially if they do hit a bad patch, if they do miss a couple kicks or maybe in a game where you miss a couple, and he's able to galvanize and bring them together and get them back on track. And that is what I think he certainly is capable of. Had a couple conversations with Nick. He's an impressive guy. And, he has certainly that ability to be that leader, despite, the position of long snapper in the NFL roster is not one that a whole, guys look to is for leadership, but I think he can pull it off.
Okay. To me, I don't, those things are important and I don't want to deny them at all. I think it's a very good point you're making about him. Would be natural for him to be the leader of the Wolfpack. I think we're going to have a hard time seeing that as much as we'll obviously see the statistical results of the punter and the kicker. I'd say I want field goal and extra points above expectation in the top 10, so not too much higher, but also the punt team to have expected returns, starting field position, I should say, of the opponent in the top 10. The Ravens offense should give them plenty to work with in terms of that. The Ravens offense moves the ball very well, so they're going to be, punting more, probably further out and having at least an option or a possibility of the punter pinning teams deep. So I like that as a definition. All right.
That works for me.
All right, let's move on to Lamar Jackson because that's what we wanted to spend our time talking about. 28 years old now, entering season 8. Consecutive MVP level seasons, I'll say. To me, it's consecutive MVPs since the new extension was signed. Probably about as good a contract as you can get in the NFL these days. I like Rashad Bateman's contract for value, but Lamar Jackson has it beat 10 ways from Sunday.
Yeah, he is. He was frankly was underpaid when he signed it. I think that. Not everyone maybe thought that was going to be the case because the two seasons prior had finished injured and worse. That his talent and skill, he should be the highest or second paid highest quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And right now Brock Purdy is making more money, and that's a that'll be interesting to see how that plays out and how Lamar handles it. We saw last time when he was looking for his contracts, and it certainly got ugly. And there were some hard feelings, no doubt, in that building on both sides before it got done. They all went away once the winning began, and that's fine. That's the nature of the business. But, you've got 2 years left, and at cap numbers that are really going to soar. The longer they wait, the more expensive it is. Now, maybe that's what Lamar wants. Maybe he wants to keep waiting and waiting and waiting to go ahead and try and build up that value and see maybe, maybe last time I didn't get as much money as I could have, should have, so that'll be an interesting to see how he approaches that. I'm sure that Eric and company would love to get him locked up as soon as possible, because every contract that comes afterwards only makes his more expensive.
I like to read between the lines when I hear from anybody in the Ravens organization. They're extremely tight-lipped. They're very rarely direct. If you're looking for Lord of the Rings character analogies for the various people, there's some good ones to be made. There's a couple golems on the team where you're just very hard to figure out what they're trying to say. But if I were to look at John Harbaugh, he's a Saruman. He's an extremely careful communicator. And he kind of wants to make a point to you. And then sometimes he gives himself away still because he talks in flowery language about a player he really likes, and he coach speak on the 80% in the middle and gets very salty with those 10% that he's really having a problem with. And he's not uncomfortable about showing when he's upset with a Tim Williams or, where Ben Cleveland was, especially when the question keeps getting asked about why isn't he playing left guard for the Ravens. But how this came up in this was that Eric DaCosta talked about going down to talk to Lamar about who he'd like to have on the offense, that he'd earned the right to have input into how the offense was constructed and whatnot. And obviously they gave him that with the Odell Beckham thing, but I don't think that's what he meant at all. I think, when he says, I'm going to go down and talk to Lamar about who he wants on the offense, it may be, I'm going to go down and talk to Lamar and say that a contract extension right now would make it a lot easier to get some other offensive players around you.
And that is absolutely 100% true. Because, now for this year, I think he's surrounded beautifully. He really is. It's in a great shape. It'll be very interesting 2026 when you have a lot of guys that, you look at it right now, won't be here. Now, obviously, things are going to happen, change. Some guys will have new deals and go forward. But, it would certainly behoove the team to find a way to get it done. And I don't, it'll be very interesting to see what Lamar's goals become. I know one of his goals is to be a billionaire. He made that very clear. So the last contract didn't do that for him. And so I think that I know he wants to do that. And that's something that's important to him. But also we'll see, how much is it, do you want your entire legacy of at least meaningful play time to be here in Baltimore? Mm-hmm. And what kind of team do you want around you? And that's got to factor into the equation when you're trying to figure out what you want to do. And that's just, Lamar is not an open book in that regard. He just doesn't open up and share. You never see leaks from his camp because his camp is tiny and it's all very personal people. He doesn't, have people that would have any reason or desire to want to let out some, a little gossip on what he's really thinking. Doesn't happen. So we'll just have to wait and see. But again, it would make everyone that cares about the outcome of the Ravens on Sundays, the sooner the better to get a deal done, and would allow them to continue this stretch where this window where every season you are going to contend for a Super Bowl championship.
Yeah. Well, with you all the way on that. And obviously Lamar Jackson under a reasonable contract structure is about the greatest starting point you can have for that sort of contention. Let's talk about Lamar, the football player, a little bit. You talked about him not being concerned about him not being at OTAs, and I'm not either. The one thing that Lamar has done every season since maybe not including his rookie year, but certainly since his rookie year, is come to camp with something we didn't expect that he would be as a football player every year. 2019, all of a sudden, complete difference as a passer from working with this guru over the offseason. He's mastered much more at the line of scrimmage in 2024. I thought that was a big step forward in terms of getting the line quickly, making pre-snap reads very effectively, doing a better job of distributing the football. Just there were a lot of ways in which Lamar was a better football player in 2024.
And a lot of it also went back to what he did physically and to make himself lighter.
Great point.
To get back some of the twitchiness that he, you know, he had bulked up trying to handle the rigors. You know, he thought being at 225 to 230 would allow him to better withstand taking hits and the punishment. When he found it, when they don't hit me, when they can't touch me, it's a lot harder to hurt me if you can't catch me. And that's what we saw last year. He really returned to what looked like 2019 elusivity. And then, you know, combined with the knowledge now and understanding of playing the position at a much higher level, that's how you get to 41 touchdowns and 4 picks, which is just, I still can't believe that's what it was. There's some luck that involved with that. Some balls that should have been picked and weren't, and vice versa. But I mean, he had an unbelievable regular season campaign. One of the all-time greats. He didn't win the MVP as a joke. But what he was able to do in slowing everything down, it really did look like nobody was surprising him. Whatever the defenses threw at him, okay, I've got an answer for that. And I think you also have to credit, you know, really credit the coaching staff for that as well. And what, you know, having a full year with Todd Monken and understanding what that full offseason with Todd and what that meant. Because I think he is a phenomenal offensive coordinator and is really doing, you know, finding ways to bring out the best in this. And then, and Lamar's also, I think, willingness to say, I don't have to be the guy to carry the ball the way it was. You know, you see the carries are going down. And a lot of them are still scrambles, but the design carries are way down. I had this alien I can hand the ball off to and let him, Derrick Henry, to go ahead and be that guy, that sledgehammer, and how much that then will open things up for me anyway. So just the whole maturity of it to go along with the physical prowess is what we saw last year. But as we've seen, there are still areas where he can get better. And then you think about, my God, he can get better? What is that going to look like? Well, it's going to look like it happens in January and February.
Probably that's true. That's the thing that will make everything better, even if he regresses in some way as a passer. I mean, I was one of the people who said he'd never have another year like 2019. And you could make the argument that the 24 season was better or not. I think it probably, from my vantage point, it pretty clearly was a little bit fewer rushing yards, but the relative passer rating maybe was a little better in 2019 relative to the rest of the league. But in 2024, I mean, he just did so much in terms of being mature as a football player. I think that it was clearly at least as good a season, despite the lack of an MVP award. And I think Jackson has taken a lot of criticism for the playoff losses that does not fully reflect what Jackson has done during the regular season to absolutely eviscerate the best teams in football. They're 19-7 against teams with winning records the last two seasons. That's an unbelievable record. In fact, 10 wins in 2023 and 9 wins in 2024 are the two highest totals ever for single seasons against winning teams in the NFL. And, you know, Buffalo, their big argument for one of the big arguments for Josh Allen winning the MVP award was they'd beaten the number one seed in each conference. Well, big deal. They went 3-3 during the regular season against teams with winning records.
I seem to recall a Sunday night in Baltimore.
Yeah,
where it didn't necessarily go their way. The thing, Josh Allen is very likable. He is very talented, and the voters decided we like him. He looks like an MVP. He should have one here. And they threw away what the statistics that were just ungodly from Lamar. Yeah. And because he ended up finishing behind him in terms of record, and it was wrong the year before then, but it's funny, you know, look at Lamar's statistics when he won it in 2023 and they paled in comparison to what he did the next year. So, I mean, sometimes that's the way it goes. I would care more about it if I really thought Lamar cared.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's whatever, you know, at this point for Lamar, I really do believe, you know, he's like, he knows his legacy where, how it's going to be determined from this point going forward. And it's not about what happens in the regular season, the awards that come along with that. It's going to be what happens in the postseason. That's just where he is, because he has done everything you can do in a regular season. It's not just putting up now incredible passing numbers, incredible rushing numbers. It's doing things in a way that they've never been done from that position. And we, you know, every time he takes a snap, you might see something you've never seen before on a football field.
It seemed to be a weekly occurrence.
Nobody else is like that. And that's what makes him so very special and makes really all the more frustrating that it hasn't happened better in the playoffs. And, you know, I thought though, even though it ended kind of the same way as it did the year before, one good win and then a loss, I still think the one good win was greater than anything he'd done in the playoffs over Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And in the loss, he had some bad mistakes, no doubt, but he didn't let that define his game. He rallied back from that, made so many great plays, and put them in a position where they had an opportunity to win. And that was different from the other playoff losses.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the fumble early was part on him, but I'd say it was more on Linderbaum with the bad snap, putting him out of position, getting his back turned to the defense and whatnot there. The fumble Andrews obviously didn't have anything to do with him. And then the interception wasn't great, but you know there was some question as to whether a route got stopped or not there. I'm not going to get into that in any depth, but the one thing that I do have a problem with him from the Buffalo game isn't any of the turnovers. It's the time management at the end of the game. And that's that, you know, their only avenue to victory was to get the game tied as late as possible and then win the game in overtime. Because, you know, they didn't really have any chance residually, not any meaningful chance to recover an onside kick and do it, or to really stop Buffalo had they kicked the ball away. If anything, Buffalo would have had the option to run out the clock on them and go to overtime, or Buffalo could have driven down the field much more likely and gotten into field goal range and had a good chance to win it. But I thought they gave away about 60% of their chance to win the game on the fact that they mistimed the scoring. And there's a combination of people that are responsible for that. One is Jackson, and one is Monken, and the other is Harbaugh. And any one of those guys can say, hold on, slow down this here, partner. You know, get the message into the huddle that we need to do this. And Jackson, it's not unreasonable at this point in his career to have him be one of the people who's responsible for that. I think the Ravens have a whole headset loop full of people who could have said something also to those guys, but it's not unreasonable at all for Jackson to think, okay, how much time we got left? We want to score with 10 seconds to go, you know, yada, yada, or to ask the question back to the sideline as he's, you know, listening in his helmet.
No, I absolutely. And we talk about how can it get better. Well, that's certainly one way. Now, it's not that we haven't seen him do it. He has been times where he has run it really well and just the exact proper, you're snapping it at the right time, making the right decision on how quickly something's got to be done, you know, whether I got to go real fast or whether I need to slow. We've seen him succeed at that.
In fact, just the previous week with the touchdown at the end of the half against Pittsburgh was a great, the chef's kiss. You're right.
Exactly. So it's doing it in that moment when, you know, in that game, you're already blowing them out. So it was a little easier to handle that just mentally, that situation. But at this point, when you got to have it, you're on the road and one of the most, and that stadium is one of the most hostile environments. It was special. It was a special environment for sure. And it's snowing, it's miserable, it's cold. That's where you're going to be determined how great you can be when you can find a way in that situation, everything stacked up against you in that regard, to still be mentally as calm and focused and stay in that. And that's where the step forward that can be made.
Now, I'm guessing both of us were at that game. I know I was, but I'm guessing you were probably in the press box for that game, which was nice and heated.
It was, but I had to do my Ravens wrap-up show on the field.
There you go.
In the snow, trying to keep my laptop at least somewhat covered, because it was also my monitor to see the highlights I was discussing.
There you go.
And it started snowing so much harder than it did during the game. And I mean,
I'm
was
still
really
hearing
coming.
Violins going off here. At
I couldn't feel my hands. Yeah. I could barely hold the mic.
It was, you walked 7 miles uphill both ways
both
to get
ways.
There. Yeah.
Both ways.
I will say, we sat in the club section and you're broiled. You literally can see this glow from underneath, from out of the club section going, but you're literally underneath a broiler in those seats. And it's wonderful. It's very comfortable, but they're outdoors.
Modern technology, maybe not all that bad.
Yeah. No, it's fine. But I can still understand why Buffalo wants an outdoor stadium going forward and doing that. I want to go back to something you said earlier, because you mentioned that Lamar had done some things to get it to regain some lost speed and elusiveness that he didn't have when he was weighing a little bit more. This is going to be an unpopular opinion, I'm afraid, but most of the adjustments that I think he's going to make over the next 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, however long it is, are going to be things that adjust for his inevitable loss of speed. Now, it doesn't mean he's not going to be elusive. It doesn't mean he's not going to be able to move around the pocket a little bit. It probably does mean he's not going to be running away from people in the secondary the way he was. I think that time is probably coming to an end here pretty soon. And it may mean he's going to be even more diligent about staying behind the line of scrimmage. And I think that's where some of this has come. He went from 72 down to 47 scrambles this last year. And a lot of that was all Lamar decision-making, deciding to extend more behind the line of scrimmage as opposed to taking a run as offered.
Yeah, and I think that he's also learned that he can do that and still be very successful. In fact, maybe be more successful. The extending a play with when he twice stiff-armed Sam Hubbard.
Yep.
And to wait for Isaiah Likely to come free enough to get in the ball. Because his belief in his ability to put the ball on the money in those situations has never been higher. So he really would rather make the pass than make the run. And as we saw early on, that wasn't the case. He didn't have the trust. He may outwardly did, but I just don't think inside he didn't have the trust that he would just take off.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to, I know I can trust this. I know I can make that guy miss and that guy and that guy. Now it's like, you know what? I'm just going to keep waiting and buying as much time as possible. And I'm going to be very good at doing that for a very long time because the twitchiness, the 2-3 step, twitchiness that he has, it is unparalleled at the position. That's going to be there for much longer than a 40 time. And I don't think that's going to be a detriment for his game in terms of, maybe you're not going to have a 75 yard run like you did against the Dolphins a few years ago for a touchdown. Okay. So what? I don't think that is going to be impactful. I'd much rather see him just continuing to be able to buy time, and the more experience he has in doing that, and then putting the ball where it matters to get it to have for his guys to go make a play.
Yeah, he's still. I mean, this impacts so many elements of what he does, but he remains the greatest leverage reader I've ever seen as an athlete. And there's a couple of guys who fall into that same category. If you want to go to Barry Sanders or Gale Sayers, go right ahead. It's very reasonable. Those guys knew how to read what the opponent was going, knew or to read how his leverage was, work off that, deke that leverage in a lot of cases. Great receivers occasionally can do it at a very good level, but they can't do it like with the consistency Lamar Jackson does. The only other athlete I can remember with that kind of leverage reading is Muhammad Ali. And it's early Ali being the defensive fighter. Just no one can touch him. I mean, he knows exactly what's coming. Everything is measured in milliseconds in boxing, and he knew exactly where the punches were coming. And if he's slipping of either direction, he's unbelievable to watch. And if you haven't ever had a chance to watch Clay Liston, the original Clay Liston, because of the second fight, he's Ali Liston at that point. But for Clay Liston, look at the 1964 fight. It's only 6 rounds, and you'll see a guy who just cannot be punched. It's an unbelievable outclassing of a thought to be indestructible heavyweight at the time.
And the other person that Lamar reminds me of, or I think of, Dante Hall.
Yeah.
A 2 or 3 year stretch as the Chiefs punt returner, he knew where the defender was going to be before the defender knew, and could change. And was that level of twitchiness that you couldn't tackle him for a couple years. And when you could have 8-9 guys there in position to do so, he still would make a miss. It was you just couldn't believe that happened. Yeah, I had the same kind of feeling. I had to watch every punt return during that stretch because just like you have to watch, every Lamar play now, because you never know if you're going to just be left speechless watching him play.
I'll characterize that a little bit differently personally. I would say that if I look at Jermaine Lewis, Devin Hester when he was at the top of his game, Dante Hall, and Ed Reed, unbelievable readers of the field. So they have an they can figure out where they're going because they can figure out what's going on, and they've got to make one elusive move to avoid that first contact, which they could often make. Lamar Jackson, we don't usually get to see him in fourth gear, period, because he's running around in third gear, ready to maneuver at third gear, and that's deadly, in those first 15 yards.
It was interesting though. You go back to Christmas Day, and the touchdown run against Houston, mm-hmm. that he did hit 21 miles an hour or something on, with again a level of speed. I was like, oh, I hadn't seen, because again, you're right, he stayed in third gear almost all the time. Never going, really getting it in overdrive. And then he did it there on that. And it was like, oh, right, you can be that super straight line fast guy again, still too. It's still there, which also makes me wonder, like, how long is that going to be there? Because he brought it out, and I'd forgotten that he could do that, honestly, in that way. And he just took off and just beat everybody to the end zone. I was like, all right, it's still there.
Let's move on and talk a little about this supporting cast, because I think this is the best supporting cast Lamar's ever had coming into this year. And there are concerns for 26. I mean, big time concerns with the fullbacks and tight ends all being on their final year of their contract being the primary thing. Wide receiver group is intact for 2 years in theory, if there's not a holdout from Bateman at some point with wanting a new deal. But at least in terms of Flowers, he's here for 3 more years, including a fifth-year option, and Bateman is signed for 2 more. I think that the wide receiver group is 6 deep, and they can get something out of all 6 players. Wallace, a multifaceted contributor to the team in general with his special teams, but hell of a run blocker. He's one of the best run blockers in the entire NFL at the position. Did things as a receiver that have never been done by a Raven last year with 16.1 yards per target. I think that we'll see LaJonte Wester play a really big gadget role in this offense. And I'd love to get your take on that, because it seems to me he's going to be active for all 17 games as a punt returner, which opens up all sorts of offensive possibilities.
Yeah, if he's going to be there, if he wins the job as the punt returner, and you still, I want to see him do it. That's the thing. It's just one of those positions that, even if you've done it in college, it's just such a different animal. In the NFL, so being able to consistently secure the ball, make the right read, when to catch it, when to not. And, so I want to see that. But yes, if so, you watch what he did at Colorado, and he was a nice player. He did some great things once he got his hands on the ball, despite the stature that he possesses. So, in space, he's a problem. So if you can find, if that's another weapon, by all means.
I think one of the exciting things about this offense that could be different than it was before is Monken, for the first time, has an opportunity to operate a true fresh legs offense. And they've done more and more substitution of the 5 eligibles on a play-by-play basis, meaning they're, 3 or 4 of the 5. This could be like the 2010 Saints or something, where they go 5 for 5, a fair number of plays. And I can't even express to you how difficult it is to be a defender. Not that I've ever done it personally, to be a defender and on the field for 15 consecutive plays when the other team is just exchanging their personnel, coming back on the field, everyone has a kind of a smirk on their face as they're lining up, ready to outmove you somehow. It's unfair to defensive backs.
Well, again, as a reminder, it's also harder to play defense. It's more taxing when you don't know where you're going. The other guy does.
Yep.
So that it takes more out of you just when you're playing the same number of plays to do it. So then you add in that factor, and that could certainly be a real problem. And I am really excited to see what DeAndre Hopkins is going to be able to bring to the table. He's not the deep threat that he once was, but his hands are, I can't wait to shake it, because I want to know, my hand's going to look so tiny, and I can palm a basketball, and it's just going to get swallowed up in these mammoth mitts that he possesses. The way he catches a ball, 2 hands, 1 hand, whatever, just unreal. And to have that size wide receiver that has the hands like that, the catch radius that he provides, because his arms are very long as well, that combo, Lamar's had it at a tight end, but he's never really had it as an effective wide receiver. So that will be really interesting to see when you combine that with Zay and with Bateman. But I just think, defensively, I'm like, God, this is a This is a problem. You still have the two tight ends that, you know, Mark Andrews playoff game notwithstanding, very talented ball player. Isaiah Likely on the verge of becoming a star. And so all the possibilities in the passing game are just, it's scintillating. And if you provide some time and are able to have the run game that you expect them to have, my goodness, again, this offense was so good a year ago, but the potential is for it to be significantly better.
Yeah.
And that's a bold statement.
Yeah, no, it is a bold statement. And I think it's not a 50th percentile expectation that they'd be as good as last year. I think even though the cast is better, I think that the likelihood is they'll regress in some areas. Not just a matter of them regressing a lot of time. It's the fact that when a team is extraordinarily successful, that every other team in the league that's going to have to face them goes back and they studies what subsets of what they did were they less successful at and tries to emulate that and tries to attack the Ravens in that way. And after 2019 for Lamar, I mean, he didn't regress personally necessarily, but he wasn't as good in 2020 or wasn't as effective statistically because other teams figured out what to do for the rest of the AFC North drafted against him, you know, in order to pick players that they, in particular, speedy inside linebackers to get after him. I'm afraid that will likely happen. But then, you know what? Lamar's going to bring something new to the table. He's going to bring something we've never seen before to the football field come July and August, and I'm excited to see what that is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, they've drafted to try – the rest of the league is drafting to try and figure out how to stop this crew. I just think there are so many different variables and ways that they can build off of what they've done. And do different things and do new things. And Todd Monken is not afraid to try and to do different things and to continue to grow and expand with it. He's not content with their play, like running back their playbook from last year. There will be a lot of different wrinkles and new things. What I do hope is that at their core, when they have to have it, I don't want to see Derrick Henry in a Wildcat. Uh-huh. Don't take Lamar Jackson out of the equation when a play, you got to have it. You know, things like that. Just don't outthink the things when it really push comes to shove, and it's the critical moment in the game.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's something I hate, the optionality lost of having Derek in the Wildcat, even though he's been remarkably successful at it in his career. It's not the ideal situation. The one time I liked it was when they faked the handoff to Jackson in the orbit motion. Mm-hmm. Around that, and that was basically not taking Jackson out of the equation.
Right, he was still a part of it, and as long because it's about there's no greater leverage created than if you're a defender than trying to figure out who's got the ball. Right. Crap, and I can't tackle either of them.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and that's what, you know, Lamar and Derek bring in a way that no other backfield provides.
It's the most powerful weapon in the game of football right now is the Lamar Jackson, the Henry Jackson mesh point.
Right.
I want to talk about Monken for a little while because I think he deserves a lot of credit for building out the offense around Lamar. Roman did some very good things. He helped make Lamar special by building the offense around him to start with. And Monken didn't come in and change everything about it. He kept a lot of the DNA of the team the same, and he made some minor but not insignificant adjustments. And one of them was to reduce the reliance on the tight end. Get Jackson distributing the football more. They had 195 tight end targets in 2022, that dropped to 110 and then back up to 128. In those last 2 years, in those 238 targets, they've had 143.5 passer rating thrown to the tight end, 30 touchdowns and one interception. Still, I've said that statistic, you know, those three statistics, I guess, are so many times on the air in the last year, and they still, every time I see it written on the notes in front of me, I'm boggles the mind.
You can't have sugar in breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right?
Yeah.
When you spread it out, it tastes much better. It's much more effective. A much better punch. And that's kind of what they learn. You know, just the more the things get spread out, as long as you can have guys be content and understand their roles and not worry about, I'm not getting mine. And to this point, it has not been it's not been an issue. And that's absolutely critical. For the way he wants to continue to build this and do things.
I think I would say that there have been two players who left Baltimore because the offense, they weren't happy with their role in it. One was Hayden Hurst after his second year, where, you know, they traded him for a second round pick. Did they want to? They had to kind of unwrap that draft
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Unstack it, because they were all coming due at the same time for contracts, and they went through a process of getting rid of Hurst and then Brown and Kenny Young, of course, in there, and finally we're down to a manageable number of contracts that they could sign, including obviously Lamar and Andrews being the two most important from the group. But Marquise Brown also left the Ravens because he's unhappy with the number of balls thrown. And I think you're hitting on, that is a nerve for wide receivers, but this offense belongs to Lamar Jackson. Everything has to run through him, including the Lamar Henry mesh point. And for people who say Henry made Lamar better, Lamar made Henry better, there's some truth to the fact that Henry made Lamar better. Sure. It's much more about how much better Lamar made Derrick Henry. And it shows up in the success rate as a runner. That's just incredible margins between basically the Ravens run offense as a whole and every other offense in the history of the NFL in terms of success rate. There has never been anything like it. So Derrick Henry, before he came to Baltimore, 49.3% success rate, which was respectable, slightly above the league average, and 58.8% in his 1 year here. The all-time record holder is Gus Edwards at 56.4%, and he dropped by a full percent with his year with the Chargers. He was 57.4 before that. So Lamar Jackson is making your running back great, greater, no matter who he is.
Well, and I think the exact number I don't recall, but Derrick Henry, when he was with Tennessee, you know, yards before contact, before he'd be hit, was like a half a yard.
Yeah.
And then he came to Baltimore, it was over two. Mm-hmm. And just so, I mean, what a world. He's like, when Derrick Henry gets ahead of steam, I think we feel pretty good about how that play is going to end. You know, it's with him going forward, you know, getting at least five, if not seven, or first down. Or maybe to the house.
For starters, with 2 yards before contact, you're getting a lot of plays against smaller men that first contact is coming against. And Derrick Henry, of course, eats those alive. Oftentimes that first contact is in the form of a stiff arm where Henry is throwing him to the ground. So love that. What else do we need to talk about here? We don't need to say anything more about the MVP award.
No, but what I was going to say, just going back to Hollywood Brown and mm-hmm. just the last couple seasons, there haven't had that. The 23 MVP, and then last year, where we've really seen Lamar just become this. Guys have not complained about their roles, touches, ball. By and large, they have, and so much of that is because of the respect that Jackson commands in that locker room. The way that the rest of the team looks at him at times, and when we're in there in the locker room with him, and the way they you can see the kind of level of awe, not just at who he is, you know, because of what he can do on the field, but the way that he interacts with them away from it, where he really is just one of the guys. And they're like, I can't believe, especially the young guys that come in for the first time, they're like, I can't believe eight is treating me this way. Mm-hmm. You know, like just one of the guys and jumping in and having fun with me and joking around. And, you know, and then they also know he's got a big temper and he'll let them have it if they're not doing what they need to do. And that's part of the evolution as well. So that is a big factor in recognizing, like, all right, look, if we're going to be get to where we want to go, what I'm going to leave it in eight hands. And if my game is to get 10 targets, it's to get 10 targets. If it's to get three targets, it's to get three. But by and large, he's going to make the right decision. And they live with that better with him than you see most players live with their quarterbacks.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, it's the way it has to be. But the Ravens also need to be careful because they can't draft a George Pickens here. You really have to be careful with your interview process and find out who's able to subjugate themselves to the team goals. And there aren't, you know, it's not a common characteristic of wide receivers, I'll say, around the NFL. It's not something that every wide receiver has, certainly.
And it shouldn't. And you think about it, I mean, your paycheck is going to be directly representative of how many catches, how many yards, how many touchdowns. And if you're not getting the ball, you're doing this for a living. So I get it. And it's fine.
You're reminding me. Deontay Johnson would be the guy that last year who was a big pain in the ass again.
Cup of coffee. And you know what? They were like, all right, dude, okay. Yeah.
And then he got no'd again in Houston. I love that. I just absolutely
he's been
love no'd that.
Everywhere.
There's a few people, even after he's a three-time loser, because he out of Pittsburgh, out of Carolina, out of Baltimore. And there's still people blaming John Harbaugh. John Harbaugh, as if it's even his decision to get rid of the guy. But there's still people blaming John Harbaugh for not involving him in the offense in a significant way that would do this. I mean, just...
Are you kidding me?
Read Twitter. It just drives you up the freaking wall with some of the stuff out there. I know that it's a minority. I'm not trying to blame anyone who has a Twitter account for this kind of thing, but there's some unbelievable extreme opinions out there on Twitter on any topic you'd like to discuss.
And it's why I've gotten to the point now, and thank goodness that my bosses don't need me and insist that I interact like they did early on. I'm happy to look for my news there and occasionally take part, but yeah, it's just not, it's soul sucking and it's just not, you're arguing with people that I'm good.
All right. So what else do we need to talk to again? There is one thing about his running that I wanted to talk to about his play in 24 in general, but he's still an outstanding run threat. We would agree, but his attempts per game have dropped to 8.2. That's not what I mean to do. Scrambles are the big part of that, but dropped by 25 this last year, which is 1.5 per game. So that right there is more than the total reduction in his run plays. It's interesting because the defense can force Lamar Jackson to run the ball more if that's what they want to do. If they want to crash on Derrick Henry, well, then it's Lamar's job, you know, reading the play at the mesh point to hold that ball and do that. It's kind of like saying he really has a complete choice. No, his job is to read how that play is going. If the end is crashing, I mean, his only play is to keep that ball. So it's not a matter of Lamar's being selfish or he's holding the ball, but he's giving one to the defense. He's taking what the defense gives him.
And I think that, you know, the Pittsburgh playoff game, he was happy to keep it, you know, and then set the tone in that regard. Said, fine, you know, I'm going to get out there and go. And then, you know, you end up with a stiff arm and the house goes crazy. And it's, you know, that's, I definitely felt like later on when he's like, all right, these in the play in Pittsburgh and Buffalo games, I felt like he was maybe early on kind of like, I'm going to save myself a little and try and avoid some punishment and maybe, you know, buy time and then still make a pass sometimes just to save himself a little and recognizing that I don't need to take that hit downfield. But I definitely thought when it got to the postseason, his attitude was, oh, I'll lower my head. I'll run through you if I need to. And that, which was, you know, the full Lamar effect in terms of his ability and desire to carry the ball. And it reminded me again, like, yeah, he'll still be that dude. And what a dude that is.
One other thing I want to talk about is his forced not to pass numbers. Now, this is a statistic of my own design, but it takes his scrambles and adds them to the sacks and yards lost, because effectively most of when Lamar is a passer that ends up being a runner or a sackee, he has a 3.8 yards per such play on average, which gains his team. Many quarterbacks are negative in this area. They don't have as many scramble yards, that means, as they have sack yards. So zero, you know, we'll get to that point. Brady, Manning, a whole bunch of guys would have been negative for most of their careers. Lamar's 3.8 is just an astronomical number. 2019 Lamar was at 5.1, which is still one of the most extraordinary numbers I've ever seen. I believe 3.8 led the league this last year, but I didn't look at every single quarterback, but that would typically be a league leading number by a, you know, a good margin. There might be one or two quarterbacks over 2.5 in a typical year. I think he did a great job of deciding when to run, deciding when not to. And that doesn't even tell you when he's extending a play, the value he's also getting that we saw week after week with some extraordinarily late throws from the pocket.
Right. How many times should he have been sacked?
Yeah.
Or at the very least should have had an incomplete pass and turn that into a scramble for a first down or turn it into a big play downfield, throwing the ball in a way that just, again, nobody else. I mean, I won't say Patrick Mahomes is certainly capable of extending plays in the same way, with a shiftiness. He doesn't possess the same breakout speed, but gosh, does he get some long runs that you can't believe he got him because he looks so damn funny running the ball. But he is obviously of that ilk. But there to be able to consistently make the best athletes in the world look silly and leave them wondering what the hell just happened is still just it's just not something. And a consistent level for now, again, this is year eight, you know, to be able to we've seen this for so long, and not be a running back is really, that's why he really has been one of one.
Yeah. I come back to the evolution being really the thing. I mean, Lamar 2018 looks nothing like Lamar today. I mean, he had a small subset of the abilities he has today, and who would have thought that you know he would develop so many different ways? I mean, I don't know another player ever whose game has evolved so much with year after year layering of new ability the way Lamar's has. I just, you know, there've been other quarterbacks who've certainly had good, productive, long careers who've adapted well to changes in their own bodies and, you know, what they could do physically still. Manning certainly had that ability, but, you know, Manning was always a great pocket passer the whole time. And he became more of a guy who just eschewed the run entirely as his career went on. It's much more than that. It's distribution of the football. It's learning to be more of a field general. It's adding, first of all, great emergency target throws and accuracy, and then adding greater distribution of the football. I mean, it's just been year after year, there have been so many things he's added.
When I think back to, I'll never forget the very first OTA when he was a rookie. And I went and I was watching with David Steele, former Baltimore Sun columnist and writer for Sporting News, a host of different places, really good writer. We're watching Lamar's first practice and he's throwing balls down the field that we're like, oh no, he can't throw. They were awful. I mean, literally, they're not even resembling a spiral and just hung in the air forever. And I'm like, they look like bad punts. And in that rookie year, before he's a starter, there was a play where they were at Carolina and Flacco in the game out wide. They snapped to Lamar. He rolls right and he throws the ball. His target is no more than 5 yards from where he's standing and it hits and it's in the dirt.
Yeah.
He turfed it. I'm like, this guy's going to be what? No way. And then for him to grow from that to be what he is has become is, it really is mind-boggling.
Yeah. Bruce Arians was calling that game, I believe. And he had the greatest term for it that I've ever heard. He goes, he saw him wide open. He tried to hand it to him. is exactly what it was. It's
right. Like, he didn't throw it. It was like, yeah. Just yeah. I'm like, that's the quarterback of the future? Come on. Yeah. How can that be?
So much
and just watch the games in 2018 when he took over. I mean, they don't resemble anything of what we see now offensively from this guy. It's like, I mean, they're the same size and build, and they can make guys miss and he can run, but nothing else is similar.
I went through in 2024, I did the show and I had a long list of things that I wanted to see from Lamar that could be improvements. I'm going to go through this list very quickly. Okay. And I want you to give me a check plus, or no, he didn't really do that on each of these. Okay. So first one is spread the ball around.
Check plus.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Distribute the ball much more effectively. And the primary thing I was looking for there was increase the Bateman trust and target share and make use of his route running.
Yeah, check plus. Absolutely.
More schemed 1-2 reads to get the ball spread. So what I'm saying there is he's going through the reads in a different order, and his 1-2 reads are different than Andrews Flowers kind of thing, where Flowers Andrews, it's somebody different on the field.
Certainly a check on that. And okay. I still think room for more growth in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. On schedule throwing, I think is what you're getting at. I'm totally in agreement on that. That's the thing. Work through progressions more quickly in a different order. I've already covered that. Continue improvements from 2023 with multiple bailout targets, not just Andrews. Big check. Yeah,
I mean, all the checks you can give him, right? I mean, how many guys did he do? And how many? And we still go, you know, the times when they didn't catch it.
Yeah.
Bateman in Cincinnati gets hit in the face on an incredible bail throw that he dotted him with. You know,
he lost a sun ball in the sun. Lost in the sun too, right?
I think. Yeah, there was some of that going on.
Yeah. All right. So improve game management skills in terms of pace, reading the defense better at the line of scrimmage, audibles, and milk the clock when appropriate. He does have a failure in that last one.
Certainly in the postseason. Again, I thought in the regular season that was all pretty good. But when it mattered most, it wasn't. So there's one that you still need to see it.
Yeah. Make good use of the gravitational pull they can get from the Lamar Henry mesh point.
I think we can say yes on that.
Yeah, you say yes on that. And reduce turnovers. He did have, he had fewer fumbles from 11 to 10, but obviously had a big drop in interceptions as well, even though he only had 7 in his MVP season, he still dropped to 4. So. I think we give him a check on that as well. You go to a player, you have a star player who just won an MVP award, and you have a bunch of goals for the next year you write down. And it seems like, well, okay, he could hit 3 or 4 of these, but if he hits all of them, I mean, he's going to be the MVP again for sure. And he basically got all but one maybe on this list. And, you know, it's 99th percentile season, I think we just observed.
And that's why I say, you know, when you say, you know, you expect a regression. I expected, you know, some level of regression into 2024 that he wouldn't check all those boxes. I'm done expecting regression out of Lamar Jackson. I need to see real regression from Lamar before and multiple seasons of it before I think that's going to be the way it's an actual trend. I had doubted. I absolutely did at different points of this, you know, Lamar Jackson. To this point, 7 season going into year 8, and what he could be and what he's capable of. I don't doubt. I at this point, I will be utterly shocked if he does not win a Super Bowl by the time his career is done.
Yeah, it would certainly be a shame. And you know, the window is wide open right now. I want to talk about, well, before we get into a good and great season, I want to talk about circumstances in 25 and how they might be better or worse than they were in 24. And I've got about 3 things on each. Actually, I've got like 3 and 2. 3 ways they might be better. And if you have any to add to this list, please do. But I think the Ravens stand to get better offensive line play from 3 positions potentially. You know, Linderbaum had a down year in terms of his pass blocking. I think they can get a little bit better play out of Falele, particularly if they just get what he did at the end of the year. If they got that for the whole season, they'd be very happy with that. And then I think at right tackle, Rosengarten had a ton of help. I think, you know, he'll evolve naturally. He'll develop naturally and hopefully take a step forward as a blocker and be able to do as good a job pass blocking with less help is all I'd ask for.
Yeah, and I think on the O-line in particular, you see – when the linemen come in year one to year two, when they get a full year in the NFL weight room, what the difference that can make. And he showed all the mental capacity you want, the ability to handle failure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you think about the game one, Kansas City, the kind of disaster early on. He was able to bounce back from that. He has self-belief. And so, and definitely the talent. So he's got the makeup for it. I think that you can feel good about that. And a left guard. What are we going to, I think there's room for improvement there. And, now you have Andrew Voorhees. They drafted him. He's not able to play his rookie year. Last year, he's able to play, but he's still, how much back is he? Is he really all the way back? Does he trust his knee all the way back? Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a definite chance that there's a reason he would have had second round grades and they got him when they did. And I think if we can see that guy, again, there's the look for upside. And with Ronnie at left tackle solidified and healthy once again, and knowing a little more about after he opened up a little more about what he went through physically after that just god awful knee leg break and ankle dislocation, all of it against Pittsburgh, to come back and play as well as he did, and he can still be better. Mm-hmm. And that's So the offensive line could certainly be better than it was a year ago.
If I'm going to a second thing, it's the skill position depth is the best the Ravens have ever had. I think that's a reason why he could be better. I don't necessarily think there's enough there to say he'll definitely be better because of that, but it could be a single plus on the three pluses to three minus scale as far as the relative talent.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very similar cast, so it's not a huge difference. You're really top level, you're adding DeAndre and that's Wester. About it. I'm sorry.
Wester also.
Yeah. So, there's not, I think they're right there. You're fine. And also we'll get back Keaton Mitchell as far as maybe being more of what we saw for him as a rookie than what we saw a year ago. And what his big play capabilities and what that might be.
Yeah. And then benefits from a fresh legs offense I have in there. I think that if Monken decides to lean on that, I think it could be very successful. I don't think there's an easy answer for that.
I think you're right. I don't know if there is. I tend to think though, what so often I'll think you can look at and have 5-10 guys that you would feel good about being at skill position wise. And that just always gets whittled by the time you get through training camp and through either injury or just seeing, hey, that guy's not as good as I thought he was, or he aged a little and maybe he's not quite as good. And so if he can do that, my God, I would be surprised if that's a capability, though.
Well, it can't be the 2025 Orioles situation where everybody's hurt, and then you end up again playing Rivera, and
now you're making
Arias is batting cleanup, and all of these things are going on.
Womp womp.
Yeah, it's hasn't been good. Okay, and now I got two ways in which circumstances almost certainly will not be better, and these are the problem. One is, I think there is a likely regression of Derrick Henry coming, and you can take the same approach with Henry that you had with Jackson about it's better to never be a doubter because he can still surprise on the upside like he did last year, but he had such a great year. It's very hard for me to imagine him repeating that.
Yeah. And I would say that if he was a human being, I'm not convinced that he is. Even just the watching the off-season workout videos that we see again going on now. He really is. I never forget saying to John Harbaugh, I'm like, are you sure about signing a 30-year-old running back? He goes, I have no concerns about signing this 30-year-old running back. And that was, point blank. And was he right. So if there is a degradation, because of the way he takes care of his body, it's not going to be fall off a cliff level of all of a sudden he can't do it. Maybe he's a tick slower, a tick less decisive, a tick less powerful, possible. It's going to happen at some point, but he's at such a high level that a tick at this point, I don't think makes much of a difference.
Right. Well, hopefully, the Ravens will drop from a historic run offense to, one that's the third best in the league. I can't imagine them being any lower than that, by the way. I can see them behind Philadelphia, maybe another team emerges, Atlanta, maybe, you know, as a Bijan Robinson there. But it's a, this is just an, this is the greatest run offense ever put together. And it's been true for the all 7 years of the Lamar era. It's really hard for me to believe the offense is going to regress in general. And one of the nice things about Henry regressing is that if a large part of regression in Henry's case would come from injury, large part potential for the risk of it. So maybe, sure, let's say there's a 20% chance Henry suffers some sort of injury this year that causes him to miss time, which probably for his age is about right. The guys they have behind him have always been able to come through, even guys who weren't any good. Latavius Murray, Devonta Freeman at the end of his career.
Kenyon Drake made good plays.
Yeah, there you go.
Right? We've seen if Lamar is the one that is putting the ball into the belly, you know, that there's an immediate like yard and a half per carry addition.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to change.
All right. And the last thing I think is the circumstance that almost certainly will not be better for him is that the adjustments the rest of the league will make to him as a passer. The time to study that, their ability to deal with who he is and figure out how they want to attack it, will undoubtedly work against Lamar. The things he was most effective doing in 2024, he's going to have to find new things in 25 if he wants to be as successful.
Right. And if for some reason the case is he is just not feeling motivated to evolve the way we've seen him continue to evolve every year, that certainly would be an issue. That would be a big problem. I don't expect that. I would be shocked if that were the case. And seeing him post game in Buffalo, to know that this, knowing the how good that team was and how really good he thought it, that this was a championship team, to see that one get away, that fuel to the fire is real. And there's just, you know, barring some physical calamity, I would just be so surprised if he wasn't ready to be able to have the answers to all the questions that these defenses are going to provide for him this year. And maybe it won't be in the first couple of weeks. Maybe they'll have to evolve. You know, last year they lost the first two games, you know, and you're like, hey, where's this? That doesn't sound like a playoff team. And there's a possibility then that, you know, that you do have to figure some things out early on. But having done what they did a year ago when they came back from that 0-2 and to get to where they were, I think that also provides a level of confidence that they can handle whatever adversity is going to, they're going to come their way, as long as Lamar Jackson is healthy and playing quarterback.
Yeah, it's a good point. And they certainly are faced with, it was going to be a hard schedule because of the teams they had to play and where they had to play them this year. Just having a first place schedule will generally guarantee that, but also playing against the NFC North makes it that much more difficult with Detroit and Green Bay and Minnesota all on the schedule. It's a very tough start to the season. It's one that the Ravens may well be tested to dig themselves out of a hole, whether that's 2-4 or 3-3 are both possibilities coming out of that early part of the season. If they're 5-1, look out NFL, because the Ravens are headed for great things in 2025.
The cold finish will be interesting as well when you're at Green Bay and you're at Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, late in the season, that will be a very good test to see kind of where they are, especially if they're games they have to win for getting to what they might be able to do in the postseason.
Right.
And so that may be exactly what they need at that juncture.
Yeah. That certainly will be a test, because it's one of the issues. I mean, honestly, it's been some fairly decent weather games where Lamar's had some trouble. Buffalo, he's great. He honestly was great, except for the turnover and a half that was his responsibility, we'll call it, in Buffalo. In the game against Kansas City, that was a cold game where Lamar was not at his very best. But then the Tennessee game in 2019 was 60-some degrees.
65 degrees. It was beautiful. Bizarre. Yeah.
And so that wasn't the reason. It was windy, but it wasn't that. Well, let's move on. Talk about what makes a good season for Lamar Jackson in 25 and what makes a great season. So you started us off with a good season.
A good season for Lamar is coming back and you know, again, 35 touchdowns. It's, you know, 4,000 yards again. It's 10 or fewer And again, this is what I say is good for him. 10 or fewer picks, which he's certainly very, he's, I think he's only had double digit picks. Was that we had 13 in 1 year, maybe in 2021 or so. Mm-hmm. And that would be good. And rush for 800 yards, you know, and add in, you know, three or four touchdowns or so for that. And, you know, just a good season. You miss a game or two because you did have to deal with a knee a little bit or something like that. But all that coming together, solid growth, you know, no regression. I'd say no regression that would make for a good season for Lamar.
Okay. Now, I mean, no regression from his MVP season would be remarkable.
Well, from the last 3 years, what we've seen from the last couple of years of where he could be.
All right. Well, fair enough. I'd say in my good, I'd say via some combination of run and pass improvements, the Ravens maintain scoring efficiency at approximately 2.65 points per drive. I don't care how the Ravens get there. There's a lot of different ways they can do it. And that's why I don't really care much about Jackson's personal passing statistics, because if they're blowing out opponents, then they're going to be running the football a lot. Jackson's going to have a yardage total in the 3,500 to 4,000 range, and people are going to be upset about it for no reason. It's for the same reason people on the opposite side get excited because their receiver for the Arizona Cardinals, who are trailing in a lot of games, gets a lot of receiving yards for their fantasy team. It's just you can't put the pieces together, you know, to really.
Yeah, if he throws for 5,000 yards, it's probably a problem.
A bad thing,
right? Yeah. Something has gone wrong. Yeah. And they're 9-8, you know, and they're just maybe on the outside looking in. So yeah,
that could definitely be the case. But 2.65 points per drive, they're actually at 2.86 points per drive last year. 2019, they're 3.08 points per drive, which was really a historic season. So I'd say Lamar plays 15 plus games in that thing. His per run efficiency is high. It's particularly in that forced not to pass area where his scrambles and sacks are good, but also his design runs are good. And the Ravens make the playoffs, and he's there for all the postseason games. And that, of course, wasn't the case in 22, which was the big disappointment, or actually in 20 when he didn't finish that Buffalo game.
The not being there in the postseason is catastrophic. So mm-hmm. They've got to, you know, although Cooper Rush is an upgrade. Mm-hmm. I don't think his mesh point with Derrick Henry, though, has the same impact that it that Lamar's is there to offer. And, you know, what's a great season for Lamar? I'm not even going to mention the regular season. It's that they're in the playoffs and that he is the guy that we see in the regular season in January and into February. That's a great season. And that's someone who, however it lays out, if it's a grind out, we need long drives, we need to run the ball, he's directing it in the manner that he should. If it's, I need to throw it 40 times, you know, and have a game like he did against the Colts on that Sunday night when they brought it back and had, you know, was what, 37 of 41 for 442. If whatever it is, he finds the way to deliver it without having that key turnover, without having that key mistake, without, you know, with making the right, reading the clock the right way, all those things coming together to support how great he has been as a quarterback. When that all comes together, it will then give him the rewards and the just rewards that he deserves.
Yeah, I think everybody, every Ravens fan would basically take the description as being only hoist the Lombardi or has extraordinary postseason success. I have some other numbers I'd like to see in a great season, but basically they're just upgrades on the good season. I'd like to see 2.85 points per drive. All the other things I think will come true. The Henry Lamar mess point is still the most extraordinary weapon offensively in all of football. I think it will be. His passer rating remains 100 plus, 10 or fewer turnovers. That might be a little bit of a stretch. It's kind of a low number. But here's the big one. I think that Jackson achieves a new level of postseason success with 2+ playoff wins. That will at least get him to an AFC championship, which I know Ravens fans are not going to be happy losing the AFC championship, but if you have to win two games, you know, to get there, and then you end up losing that game, I don't feel as bad about that. You know, they only had to win one game to get there when they lost it to Kansas City, and they got to play it at home, and they lost it, which was exceptionally painful. But if they're playing that game on the road, as is much more likely, particularly with their schedule this year, then I'm less, I'll be less despondent about losing that football game if about that being the point at which the season ends. And that said, I mean, anything short of a trip to the Super Bowl for Lamar Jackson is going to seem like a down year for the Ravens.
Right. Like you said, I think in May right now, you can say it can still be a great season if you get to the AFC Championship game. In January, you get to the AFC Championship game and lose. It isn't a great season.
Yeah, it's you can't say it on January 30th, that's for sure.
You can't. He is too great. He is. He's too much of a unicorn. And to see another year in this window that I still think is significant, but every year it's a little less so, that would be sad, again, because he is that special of a talent. And I don't think still, and maybe it's my being on Twitter too much as well, I don't think fans appreciate enough what it's like to have this guy as your quarterback.
Yeah.
And, you know, not just for the amazing things that he can do on the field, like a Barry Sanders. Remember, Barry barely ever won two playoff games, something like that, one in his career. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lamar's been and barely ever got to the playoffs. Lamar is such a winner. Is it not a QB record? Maybe not, but the win-loss record under him is the best we've ever seen in Baltimore for a stretch like this. And it is truly special. And I as amazing as it sounds, I think he's underappreciated, particularly by his own fan base.
Yeah. I mean, he's gone 3-5 in the playoffs, which is where, you know, fan bases tend to plant their flag and get upset about things. And, you know, the kind of person that gets me most upset about that is the one who tells you that they know better what makes teams win in the playoffs. I mean, come up at least with a cohesive argument for that. The Ravens have lost some games in the postseason. There are explanations for them. Some of them don't reflect terribly on Lamar, and some do. And the fact of the matter is, Lamar so far has not performed at the same level he has in there. Lamar has already, though, proven in unquestionable black ink these last 2 years that he can beat the living snot out of very good football teams on a very consistent basis with this 19-7 record versus winning teams. That should translate to the playoffs. Maybe weather's a factor, but please don't tell me that's not going to get it done in the playoffs anytime I have something to say about what makes a good winning football team.
No.
That just pisses me off.
No, it reminds me. And also with coaching, has John Harbaugh been outcoached at times? Yeah, he has. But by and large, he outcoaches the other guy.
Yeah.
And for fan, I'll never forget one time John allowed me to go. I had a question about a play that didn't make any sense to us in the post game shows with Stan White then and Brett Hollander. And we're doing the post game. And it was a play where Joe Flacco on a 3rd and 10 took a 3-step drop, threw a 2-yard out at the 20-yard on moving in on the 20-yard line, threw it to Ben Watson. So on a 2-yard out, there was literally no chance to get a first down. Mm-hmm. Like, what in the hell was that? And Stan didn't have an answer. So I asked John about the following Wednesday, and he said, let's go look at the play. And we went up to his office, and he brings up the play. Okay, I remember this play. All right. So So pre-snap, they showed blitz. They dropped 8. And Joe saw that and immediately said, shit, this is not what we have designed is not going to work.
So and Joe bailed out.
Immediately took the 2-yard out. And then what John said, now what you would like to see is buy a little bit more time and allow something to extend and come free. But then he took for the next 30 minutes and explained all that went into the design of this play. And it reminded me like how much I don't know about football, despite the fact that I've covered it for almost 30 years. And, you know, it's been a part of my life forever. And I've talked to the very smart people about it for a very long time. When we got into the real nuts and bolts, I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, there's like, and then when you hear, when you're doing the post game show and you get a call, and the guy said, John Harbaugh, I don't know what he's talking about. I just want to wring their neck.
Yep.
I just want to wring his neck because he just doesn't understand.
I had a lot of problems this offseason trying to get someone to take the fire John Harbaugh stance in a panel discussion about this. And I know they know it will be a tough gig doing so, but they're just, they're willing, people willing to do it on a devil's advocate basis. I want somebody who's really thought about it and has some sort of argument that's cohesive, you know, 10 points. And here's the key thing about this. I want to see somebody who can put together a list of 10 pros and 10 cons and say, these are the reasons why we still need to fire John Harbaugh. The guy can recognize the guy's pros and then tell you why the cons are more important. That's the guy I'm going to respect in this kind of thing. I haven't been able to find that. There's not that person out there.
Well, it's not. Now, again, to me, the only real con that is terribly significant, I thought at one point, but I've gone back on, was I think for in 17, 16, 17, 18, before the, you know, the switch, there was maybe a level of arrogance that I know how to do that. I've got this. I feel like since Lamar came along, he has kind of opened his eyes to recognize how much what possibility looks like and a willingness to try and see different things and learn more. And that, to me, that says that's all gone. He really is now just, he wants to continue to learn. And what a thing for a 61 year old coach to want. I want to learn more. And I want to find out what the possibility still may be. And that's a different approach than what maybe we're seeing towards the end of the Joe Flacco era. And I think it revitalized obviously him and having that kind of talent there, but not just for the wins and losses, but it's just his approach and seeing what is possible and how that can change. And then how much more fun than maybe the whole thing has become, and his willingness to want to try and do more.
There's, you know, it's been a remarkable shift. Okay. It's been glacial, I'll say this, but mathematicians are taking over the game of football in terms of the strategic element of it, in terms of, you know, informing coaches on what are good decisions. When you go for 2 down 8, for example, is the really big one, is one of the really big ones. The pace is still glacial, but Harbaugh and the Ravens have really been out in front of it in a lot of ways. The only guy who's been more aggressive really on a regular basis is Brandon Staley, and he couldn't keep a job because of it in a lot of ways. But Harbaugh's been very good about moving in front of that, and I credit him with that, and I think that's one of the things that I don't think Baltimore fans credit him for. They complain about postseason success. One of the things you can't do as a Baltimore fan is blame this on Lamar, because you can't do anything about that. So then you look for the scapegoat and you want to blame it on Harbaugh, or you want to blame it. If you're really thinking about it, maybe you want to blame it on Greg Roman, and they did, and they got rid of him, and now he's gone, and now they need a new scapegoat, you know, kind of thing. It's a tough situation.
It is. And, you know, when I think about just again, the way that John has been willing to embrace those numbers, and which is not the way he came up with it. Jack Harbaugh wasn't talking to him about going for it on 4th and 4 at, right, you're at your own 48, yep, you know, and thinking that was a good idea. And the change with that, and you know how much that kind of had to reinvent himself a little bit once Lamar came along, and a willingness to do that. And that's, and it's not just John. It's also that comes from the whole, that's a whole, you know, franchise mentality. And a willingness to try and look forward and to be, get ahead of things. And that's, again, I think we're, by and large, the Ravens fans are very fortunate that that's the outlook, and a desire to win and to kind of do what needs to be done to try and win. Whereas you look at enough places around the league, a lot of owners are happy to catch that check.
Yeah, the biggest place where the dichotomy is very clear is in Pittsburgh, where Tomlin regularly leads the league in cowardly punts and is one of the worst game managers imaginable. And they've still been a consistent winner. And the Pittsburgh fans are pissed off about it in a certain way, because he's effectively playing to finish 2 games over .500 or whatever is the way they claim it sometimes, that the team's very well funded, a great organization. He should do better given the players he's got. But, you know, Mike Tomlin doesn't have the quarterback and is doing okay, but game management is an area where Harbaugh is killing him. Absolutely killing him.
And that's something to be excited about again as Lamar continues to grow, what we've seen every single year.
All right. Great talking football with you, Pete. Tell folks where they can watch your show, read your material online, whatever you may have. And if they have a question about football and they want to talk to you in a civil way, where do they hit you up?
Please hit me up. Make sure to watch Ravens Wrap Up. Keith Mills will be back with me again this year. We will do that show together late Sunday nights. It's after Sunday Night Football, after our newscast. Then we get the show and we go till we're done. And it's the most fun thing I get to do in this job. Very excited to go ahead and do that again this year. I am still on Twitter at WBAL Pete, also at Blue Sky. I think it's WBAL Pete, whatever that, you know, same kind of thing. I'm there. And with any level of reasonability, happy to engage. You can also send me an email, pgilbert@hearst.com, H-E-A-R-S-T. And if you want to have a conversation that way, happy to.
All right. Well, Pete, thanks a lot for coming on. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, this is the time of the season for it. DMs me are always open on Twitter. I'd love to hear about your passion project and have you on the air to discuss what you want to talk about the Baltimore Ravens. Pete, thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.